Hello, welcome to episode 49 of the Back to Front show. Feels like 5 minutes, Kieran. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well. It hasn't been 5 minutes. Do either of us have any concept of when the last... Oh, my goodness me. 13th of January 2018. It feels like we've got a lot of ground to make up.
Yeah, I think the word intermittent is no longer appropriate.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think we need to revisit the...
Biannual.
Biannual. Yeah, there's something about that, though, isn't there? Something to look forward to.
Like a new year and... No, Christmas isn't biannual.
Well, no. I mean... Yeah. But clearly we've got the timings wrong. I mean, there was the New Year edition and the, mid-September edition. Doesn't really have a flow to it, does it?
No.
But
apologies. Moving swiftly on.
Yeah. It doesn't stop people linking us up in podcast reviews, which is very, very nice.
No, that's a lovely thing to be recognised for your lack of commitment.
What makes me wonder whether they actually look at our archive and realise we haven't actually talked complete nonsense since the 13th of January 2018. But it's a pleasure to be back. Now, I understand that you've moved into a tiny house at the bottom of your garden.
I have, yes. I've built a shack and moved all my possessions into it so that I no longer need to interact with the family.
Well, yes. Yeah, so you're telling me that your worldly possessions are one big shaggy white dog and a 15-inch Apple Mac laptop.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Me and the dog are living at the bottom of the garden.
Yeah, how are you finding... let me ask you, what technically is the difference between a shack and a shed? Is there one?
I just think the level of construction, I imagine.
What, shack is superior to shed?
No, I'd say a shack's probably the bare minimum, isn't it?
Bare minimum, but I know this not to be... I do believe there is some Farrah and Ball gracing your walls. For those listeners who don't move in such middle-class paint circles, Farrah and Ball is, all the rage, isn't it? But not cheap.
No, it's not cheap, but, it gives you the look, I'm
it
told.
It does, yeah. I expect to see you in my Ideal Home magazine that I subscribe to shortly. But how are you finding that? I'm loving it. Do you have to sort of, leave the house and trail a massive pool of Cat 5 down there, or have you got it all plumbed in?
No, it's all plumbed in. The commute of probably, all of a 20-second walk down the garden is a nice bit of headspace for me in the morning, just to reset,
Yeah, I was going to say, do you feel that prepares you for the daily hash hustle?
I mean, it gives me a chance to, catch up on my tech news, check the Twitters, check the Instas, and then really, dig into it.
Yeah, really sort of hunker down. And what about caffeine? Obviously, life can't carry on without. Do you have to retreat to the house or?
Well, no, obviously the listeners can't see my current setup.
You could share a picture.
Well, I could do. So to my right, there is a Nespresso machine sitting on a shelf with Kalana coffee capsules. Right
of
next
course,
to it.
Naturally.
ColinCoffee.com.
That's outrageous. What about water supply? I mean, where do you get that from?
I just have a big Nalgene,
A what?
Well, for our American listeners will know what I'm talking about. Nalgene's a big water bottle.
Okay. Well, again, we need pictures and links. Yeah. Very good. And you're not finding it too isolating at the bottom of the garden?
No, I've got the dog for company. We regularly pair program together. It's fine.
Yeah, I often hear the clickety-clack of those claws on the keys.
Yeah, I mean, he could get up at any minute and, disturb the podcast. So
yeah.
Best not to use his name.
Yeah, but yes, let's not do that. But yeah, along with the shed, the shack, the tiny house dream, new job.
Yes, yeah. I think pretty much we do a podcast every time we get a new job. That's pretty much the pattern, isn't it?
Yes, it is all about you.
Yeah.
this is the dynamic we have come to consider normal. But what are you up to now? I'm doing that thing where I'm pretending I don't know.
Yeah. So I moved from launch management or launch engineering, as it was renamed in Plus at Shopify, to developer experience at Shopify.
He's back to the code face, listeners. It's all about those APIs these days, and he's all over that CLI. How are you finding it?
Yeah, really good, actually. I mean, I'm only 2 weeks into it, so it's all very new still. But sort of inward-facing advocacy role, which is quite exciting.
Very, very good. Very, very good. I'd also like to take this opportunity to welcome recent listeners, in particular Dr. Steve, or who he prefers to be known as just Steve, but he is a doctor. He is a doctor. Oh gosh,
put you on the spot now.
Yeah, I'm.
Come on.
Fishes, I think.
Fishes. Oh, marine life.
I believe so.
Of marine sciences. Wow.
He's at that juxtaposition of data visualization and fish.
Oh, of course. Yes. Like me with film and tech. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a rare breed, which I think is why he's very, very, very successful. But we're regularly sit at the big table, the startup table in our co-working space in Bath. And he checked out the archive. And he actually did say that I was at times a little bit hard on you. Do you think that's fair?
I think I'm the fall guy, definitely.
What, like Lee Majors?
Not quite that bad.
Yeah, okay. Would you go as far as say as a patsy? No, surely not.
No.
No, okay, cool.
Now you're just flattering yourself.
Yeah, I try. I mean, no one else does, so it's... you have to take what you give out, right? No, that's not right. Anyways,
no, that's
okay. Well, good, new job, very good.
Yeah.
Excellent, yeah. But more travel for you, or is that you still going to be able to live in the tiny house?
No, I'll still remain in the shed for the most part. But yeah, a couple of trips over to Ottawa each year probably.
Very good.
And then, you know, some events that I'm sure we'll end up at together to happen.
Well, yeah, this is also true. Yes. Imminently, I do believe.
Well, yes, you know.
Yes, we'll be heading to the big smoke, as you like to refer to it, for Pursuit.
Yes, Pursuit.
I almost mistakenly called Hirsute the other day, which I think is an entirely different conference.
One that very, very different, yeah.
Maybe we...
But I mean, you know, it's maybe some cross-sell opportunities.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all about the cross-sell in the e-commerce world, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Very good, very good. But it's a pleasure to be back. I wouldn't like to give the impression that it wasn't without its difficulties, technically. Seemingly unable to plug in the microphone, but
with the latest or even, you know, the last few generations of Mac hardware, essentially you can't plug anything in, and you have to have an adapter to do anything. So I've got two adapters linked at the moment in order to achieve this fidelity of audio output. Yeah.
Do you think Tim Cook gets together kind of adapter makers in a secret bunker under that kind of O-shaped thing they've got going on in Cupertino and says, look, guys, you know, this is year 15 of screwing over everyone with a Mac. We're going to change something. Are you all prepared?
You got like Belkin in a room and all the Griffin and all those guys.
You
just
know,
like,
we're not letting you out until you agree to come in on this conspiracy.
Essentially, none of you can be compatible with each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, none of you, all of you have to be compatible with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I'm, I've had no end of port problems of late.
Really?
Yes, many, many, many port problems. And
input output issues.
Yeah. And basically everything has to come out of the laptop now. All of the hub on my screen is very old monitor. Trusty steed, but basically it doesn't work. It's very temperamental, but there we go.
Sad, isn't it?
Such is our woe. So anyway, hey, guess what? We're almost turning 50, our next episode. Now, if you do the averages, that's not bad. We must have been very prolific early on.
Yeah.
And have taken the foot off the gas. But it did make me think, one of our very first episodes talked about new adventures that we both went to, and it's back.
It is.
Yeah.
Tickets went on sale yesterday, I believe.
Yesterday, yeah. It's a festival. There's football and all sorts. Breakfasts, conferences,
nice.
Workshops.
Very nice.
Up in old Nottingham in the Midlands there. Haven't grabbed my ticket yet. What are you thinking of joining?
I'm thinking about it, yeah. I haven't grabbed my ticket either, but I know we had a brief conversation on the subject.
Very brief.
It does bring back lots of nostalgia. I am keen from that perspective.
I know, but it's always tricky, isn't it? I mean, you know, going back. It's like going back to your own school, you know.
Yeah, or going back to the house you grew up in.
Very odd.
Yeah.
Something about schools, though, the ceilings always seem closer to your head than they did when you were a kid. I've never quite... But you've yet to experience the parents' evening, have you?
I haven't experienced a parents' evening, no. But having been in things like school halls, I did think to myself, like... You know, I don't remember this amount of peeling lino or vinyl vinyl when I was at school, but maybe that's something that you kind of block out.
Yeah, I mean, I do look forward to the report after, not of the kid, more of your experience of actually trying to sit down on one of the children's chairs in an infant school for the parents' evening.
That would be happening.
Attempting to get up in a dignified manner.
No, I think I'd rather sit on the floor cross-legged.
Oh, again, that's something I'm not sure you'd get out of easily.
Oh, no, I'm comfortable with that. It's the small chair, medium height, do a back in problem. Yeah. I don't fancy it.
Do you kind of adopt the flying yogi position and then jobs are good? I mean, how does it work?
Just fold it all under myself.
Yeah, I mean, I've only ever seen you like looking far too comfortable in a lounge chair. I don't believe I've ever witnessed you sitting cross-legged on the floor.
You must have done.
In all these years? No.
Yeah.
Anyway, turning 50, are we going to do anything different? I mean, are we going to reach it this year?
Silly.
I mean,
we'll reach it this year. Yeah. Say it with confidence, and then when we don't, you know, we can make up some excuse like we always do.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're thin ice in excuse terms these days. But anyways, but there we go. Right, moving swiftly on with the show.
Swiftly.
Yeah.
Extended intro at all, was it?
No, not at all. But right, you've linked up. I've linked up something. You've linked up something. It's like the old times. About
we've actually, you know, put some effort in.
Yeah. On the call, I called you on the way back from the dentist 20 minutes ago.
Yeah,
that's prep.
Said what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, that's prep.
Yeah,
in our world. I mean, I do admire these people who do professional podcasts. You know, with stings and sponsors and everything.
Yeah.
But
take the time to actually talk about a sponsor and, you know, prepare and, you know, deliver content that isn't someone else's. I mean, it's just, you know, admirable.
Yeah, we're thought leaders in the rounding up of other people's thoughts space.
Yes. And the sort of, you know, pub banter of other people's thoughts.
Pub banter, pubs, yeah. Oh man, it's been a while. You get to the pub much? I mean, apart from your Sunday roast?
Never. No. No.
Your lad, he loves a roast. He's always done.
I know he does love a roast. I'm not really a pub man. Well, I mean, I am, but you know, on a Sunday, but not
open fire.
Not every night.
Some kind of warm, highly alcoholic beverage in a tumbler. That's you, isn't it?
I do like a warm, highly alcoholic beverage in a tumbler. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, what I learned every year of asking users for money for the first time. This is a naturally Medium post by Owen Williams.
Yeah, of Amsterdam, apparently.
Of the Dam, yeah.
Yep.
Who's took me a moment to place when you mentioned him, but I also read this a few weeks ago. This is from August 28. It is an 11-minute read, so we won't... I wonder how they work that out. How do they know how fast or slow I read? Has it got some kind of creepy algorithm in there? Does it say 11 minutes for you, or is it just for me?
Where's it gone? 11 minutes read, yeah. Ooh. It's about scroll time and stuff like that, isn't it?
God, they're tracking all that. Oh, they're amazing. Mm-hmm. What piqued your interest in this particular post, Kieran?
Well, I think honesty was a big factor. I think you read a lot of stuff on Medium in particular about startup life or, you know, the hustle. I'm up at 4 in the morning, you know, my routine.
I think 4:25 alarm.
4:25 in the morning.
4:30 start.
Crushing it.
Yeah.
After, you know, 2.5 hours at the gym.
Curls or whatever it is.
And a green drink, whatever they are. You know, they are
like Mountain Dew or something.
Well, no, like, you know, Super Green or whatever Tim Ferriss drinks. Tim Ferriss green drinks. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff on Medium that, you know, I scroll past about, you know, how they are crushing it and how, you know, you've got to be in it to win it and all that stuff. And this was an article where, you know, first of all, the title piqued my interest because it was about charging people money for your services as opposed to, you know, trying to be the next unicorn and growing a behemoth and selling it for, you know, billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially about a chap whose first, you know, skill set seems to be journalism, you know, a writer, and has sort of taken on a project to do a morning technology briefing
which gets delivered to you, I think it's 4 times a week. And it's essentially a roundup of like what matters in tech and why it matters. So he's adding context to the news stories, basically. And it was launched in August last year. And what he's doing is he's basically giving us a review of his year and how, you know, how things went from a MMR. That's a scan here. Monthly recurring revenue perspective, and also from a sort of technology perspective and what he learned during that time. It's quite an interesting story of, you know, him hacking together an MVP basically and giving it to 20 of his friends just to get him into the routine of writing it. And then very quickly he moved on to saying, you know what, I'm just going to charge for this. And he offered the 20 or 30 people who'd originally signed up, you know, a, you know, introductory lowest price is ever going to be, you're never going to get this cheaper type deal. And they all signed up, and he quickly jumped to like $862 MRR, which is pretty great, you know, from nothing. And he pushed it out on Product Hunt. So he got about 100 people that first month. So before he pushed it out, he got about 100 people just from those 20, 30 friends sharing it and saying, you know, I'm supporting this, you should too. It's a new model for, I should say that it's not advertising supported. It's purely like paid for content. So this is like, you know, part of that movement of people who don't want to have advertising in their face when they're reading stuff, and are willing to pay for good content. And just because of that movement, then people spreading it, he jumped to like 100 subscribers, which is pretty amazing in a month. And then he goes into a bunch of technology problems he had. He started off using Craft CMS, which he regretted because he was using a plugin for Craft CMS, which I can't remember what it was called. It's called Charge. And Charge basically had a bunch of different problems with it and was creating bugs. And you couldn't.
He had to fork it, didn't he, or something?
He had to fork it and rewrite it. Yeah. So he, I think the key problem was stuff like, if you had a subscription and you cancelled it, you couldn't reactivate your subscription. You had to sign up with a new email address, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah.
It was just a bit clunky and people were getting frustrated with it. But I think the thing that was most interesting is watching his revenue grow. Like when he launched on Product Hunt, after he fixed the bugs, he jumped from $800 to $1,600, almost $1,700 a month, or euros a month, I should say, because it's Amsterdam.
Yeah, so that's, I guess, well, with the exchange rate, maybe two and a half, at 1,700 euros is probably...
Yeah, about, something like that, yeah.
$1,000, yeah.
Yeah, so doing pretty well, really, considering he's like, you know, this is December, he launched on Product Hunt, and he's got, you know, August to December, he's gone from, you know, zero to, you know, 1,700 euros.
Brilliant.
And he talks about churn and how painful churn is and trying to work out why people are churning. But then the bit that's really sort of, I guess, pretty cathartic for him and interesting to us was a section called The Lull,
yes,
which is the most interesting bit, where he talks about how people like Product Hunt and Indie Hackers and all those different things glorify startup life. And how depressing it is to see that plateau and to not know why and not know how to resolve it and stuff. And like that it's a very sort of chip, 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 chip. And you're sort of growing, but you're growing excruciatingly slowly. And it's, you know, so far from that hockey stick that everybody, like, you know, dreams of.
Mm. Yeah, no, that really struck me too, reading it the first time a few weeks ago. And where is it? Let me find it. He said, oh my God, it's the most depressing, weird experience ever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Growth was slow, steady and reliable, but every cancellation and sign up felt like the most gut wrenching or exciting thing that could possibly happen. It's a strange emotion, and looks something like this in the numbers. He's very open with his numbers as well. I mean, yeah, this is not a...
posts his dashboard, doesn't he? So he's posted, is that Bear Metrics?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, yeah. it's not a sad story. I mean, it's actually kind of encouraging and inspiring in many ways.
It's the opposite of that. It's hugely, like, inspiring, really, because he gets to, like, 2,300, is it?
Yes, and with the annual run rate of 27,669 euros, which is what, 38,000 maybe, something like that,
dollars.
Which is great, and that's with 344 subscribers. Now, what I think is fascinating about this, and there's a guy called, I think it's Jason Zook, who's the guy famously years ago sold advertising on his T-shirts and wore a different one each day and made $1 million.
Yeah.
He's launched a new sort of, I guess, I'll put it in the show notes, but kind of a business support kind of, you know, coaching type service. I would probably describe that very badly. I'll do it justice in the notes. But his goal is to get to 330 customers. They're going to charge X a year. They want to give 20% to charity. And so in order to do that, that gives them very, you know, the amount that they need to live on and have a lifestyle that they would like to live.
Yeah.
And I think what struck me most is how relatively small, or at least to me, that number was in terms of the number of subscribers to the service. Obviously, that's not a set it and forget it. He's got to fulfill on that, as does Owen in this example. You know, he's earning that money. It's not a set it, forget it, and put your feet up type scenario.
Not at all.
But nothing is, right? But yeah. I thought it was very interesting. You know, we're not looking at 10,000 subscribers, you know, 100,000 subscribers. We're looking at 344, which, and again, I don't know, we're not privy to his required outgoings, but he's earning, you know, close to 30,000 euros from his own endeavors, which I think is pretty special.
Oh, yeah, I think it's amazing. And you can't forget, this is basically an indie publishing outfit.
Yeah.
And I know you've had experience with the indie publishing world. I've worked for major publishers before who've been trying to make digital work for them. Like, this is impressive, really, considering this is, you know, the indie publishing world is very hard to make things work, right? Mm. So it's great that this is, you know, so successful. I think the things that he lists that he learned are quite interesting as well. And it's interesting how he's kind of had to become a developer in the midst of this, but that he, even though he's had that experience of having to learn PHP to fix the problems that he was having, he kind of says that, you know, he next time would probably, you know, if he was to do it again, he would probably, you know, look to pay for services that just solve a problem rather than trying to fix it himself, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. Interestingly, there's a service called Review, revue.co, I believe, or getreview.co. Reflection, I think, is the URL. I'll put it in the show notes. But they now do a pay. I mean, it's very nice. It's unlike, say, a MailChimp or any of those where you can kind of create your own custom templates. This is like, you know, we give you this format, you can tweak a couple of things, but it allows you to link up to you know, different feeds, and you can drag and drop, and it will go off and get like the sort of featured image and all that kind of stuff. Really, really nice, really easy to use. But they now offer a paid service as well, so, you know, that could be something that he could have potentially shift this to. It's, you know, it's based on the number of subscribers, and so you'd need to work out the cost of maintaining his own infrastructure against the cost of the service for the list size. Actually, for 344, I think it'd be relatively cost effective. But then, you know, that would allow him to focus less on the tech, more onto the content and growing the business.
Yeah.
So I think, and this is something we've talked about a lot in the past, you know, do you build yourself, or do you work and get good at knowing the peculiarities of different platforms and let 80% of the problem be taken away for you for a cost, a physical sort of monthly cost. But he's €8 a month for the monthly subscription, and 80 a year, which euros a year, which gives you 2 months free. So interesting. We'll put all the links to the newsletter and his sites and that article in the show notes. But definitely worth a read.
Absolutely, yeah.
Something else that caught my eye, just as our second post, was something that a friend of mine, Steve Jones, linked me to, which was a digital health sort of design company called Hanno, HANO.co. And they've published a series of playbooks around how they run their business and culture. And I'm very interested in sort of culture of companies, whether it's something that you can actually plan and influence heavily, or whether it's something you look back on organically and think, well, that is our culture.
Uh-huh.
A, it's good, and B, actually, or B, you know, it's not great, we need to fix things. And how much of a steer, you know, a team within a company can influence that, and, you know, is it something that you just have, or, you know, all these things I find very, very interesting. I find it particularly interesting, and we talk about this a lot, around this notion of, you know, remote work and feeling part of a company and adopting culture. And
yeah.
And so this really piqued my eye. I hadn't heard of the company. I mean, the site's very nice, but they published, what are they? They're calling their culture toolbox for remote work, which is, again, I will link up. There's a couple of things in the remote work playbook. It's kind of folded. This one's kind of best practices. And then there's the one around the culture, which I think is really interesting. And they talk about how they're slowly documenting a toolbox of exercises that we use to improve team culture. So things like buddy calls, pairing, the weekly team hangout, monthly one-on-ones. And then if you click through into them, they talk a little bit about of, you know, what that looks like. So say, for example, the monthly one-on-one call, it starts off by saying one of our most important cultural values is that we will never settle. This means we work really hard to help our shipmates grow. I guess that's their internal term for their team.
For their team, yeah.
And so, you know, they talk about how they structure these calls, two calls per month, one as a coach, as a subject, and, you know, real focus about what you're struggling with, what they want to get better at. And then the coach sends over a brief conversation starter a day or two ahead. And then, you know, it talks through the ground rules. Things like the shipmate leads a call and talks about things they want to discuss. The coach is not a manager. The coach should not give commands or prescriptions. They're only able to ask questions and offer advice if it's requested. And so I think this is really interesting because as we've both discussed, I think, and Buffer actually referred to this kind of continuum of remote. We often put remote into one bucket. And I think in this Buffer article, they sort of mentioned five degrees of working in a company. One is you're 100% based in the office. One is most of the people are based in the office, some are remote. One is like, you know, I work from, you know, most people work from home. And then it's like degrees of nomadry. where, like, you know, they might travel sometime, then work from home, and then people on the go all the time. Yeah. And I think, you know, the latter few are few and far between in reality. We've all read the sites and articles that discuss this, but a lot of companies now have the bulk of people in an office somewhere, and then these people dotted around. So I think, you know, it's a real challenge, and I think the feeling when you are one of those people who's dotted around as a company grows is that you can lose track of being in the company, you know? You see a lot happening at the other end and then you're not necessarily feeling part of it. So I think they've kind of recognized this, and I think it's a really, really interesting way for someone who's maybe coming into the company to feel as best they can to feel part of it. And so there's things like team feedback, retrospectives, which is another one they talk about. And they talk about, like, you know, how to run a retrospective and why it's important and things like that. So yeah.
It's interesting. Are they a 100% remote company, or do they have an office? Cause I was reading through this and I couldn't get a sense of that.
I don't believe they're in any way remote, as a fully remote company. It looks like, if you read through the site, they've got, offices and space and all that kind of stuff in various places. So I think what they're recognizing is that good people aren't always on your doorstep, and you know, ways of you can get good talent, but it's also a challenge, a really big challenge. And again, you know, death by Slack, but they also use Slack. They build a Slack bot called Oscar. You know, it asks you how you're feeling, the results, you know, what's on your brain, things like that. We use these internally. I'm not a, you know, Slackbot is not my friend, I don't feel. I'm probably a very bad Slackbot acquaintance. but I feel we communicate in other ways. And so it feels, to me personally, it feels like a bit of an extra task to have to sort of reiterate
what you've been doing,
what I've been doing and what I will be doing.
I think I love how intentional this is. I think that, you know, I think that lots of companies, you know, I've got friends who've taken, I think, you know, sorry, I'll start again. I think the concept of remote is so different to different people, and companies take on the idea of, like, we need someone with specific talent, or, you know, we're based in, you know, the deepest, darkest West country, for example. And, in the UK, and we can't get access to, you know, the top quality Ruby developers we need, or whatever the problem might be, and they sort of embrace remote for those reasons. But very often, you know, there's, as you say, one or two people dotted around in different places, and the culture in the company doesn't adapt to draw those people in at all. And you know, I've had friends who've taken remote, quote unquote, jobs, and they've, you know, the company's had a phone line installed at their house, and, you know, so that they can phone the employee and all that stuff. And it's kind of like you're expected to not leave your home and things like that. Whereas this is very much targeted around people, you know, people are remote for all different reasons. Some people want to sit on a beach and work. Some people are, you know, happen to want to live in the countryside and don't want to live in a city, and therefore, you know, whatever. But I think that there's the definition of remote is so vague, and it's used in such a throwaway manner right now, that it's really good to have these kind of things where someone applying for a job at a company can look at the remote playbook or the remote policy or whatever it is for the company, and understand what that company means by remote. Because I personally wouldn't want a job where, you know, the company installs a phone line in your house and you can't leave between 9 and 5 and all that stuff. That feels like you're just, you know, or you have to leave your webcam on all day or whatever the whatever the policy is.
And like, you've heard of that, have you? People have.
Oh yeah, I've got friends who've had jobs with, but that's the situation. Yeah,
they have to leave the webcam on as well. Blimey.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, they basically have a, you know, a hangout running constantly with the team. But I think
that's very odd in a way, because it's just not normal. It's a bit like surveillance.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think even the sort of, like, you know, we're installing an office desk at your house type thing is a bit weird. You know, like, I'm quite open, you know, that I, you know, might be in a coffee shop one day, or I might be on my sofa the next day, or I might be in my office, you know, the day after. And it's, you know, that's one of the joys of being remote for me, that I don't have to, you know, be tied to a desk or tied to one location or whatever. And that goes further, doesn't it? Like, people could be on a beach in Bali one day and then in Sydney the next day, you know, whatever, if they've got a more nomadic approach. So it's, yeah, I think it's really good just to communicate the type of remote that the company, you know, has signed up to.
Their best practice articles are really interesting as well. There's three currently. One is for video calls, the other is for using Slack, and then there's equipment recommendations. And they start off with video calls. There's a fundamental part of remote work, but oh, so easy to get wrong. Let's try to fix that. So they use Zoom. They've talked about remote call etiquette. So there's things like, you know, mute your microphone, raise your hand physically if you'd like someone to, if someone else is speaking, show a thumbs up, make fewer listening sounds on group calls. If you're saying, yep, definitely, while someone is talking, this can interrupt and distract. So, and then there's some tips around improving audio and video. I mean, I'll double check whether they're fully remote, because there's a good sort of 7 or 8 people on this picture of
and they're all remote, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. There's an item here which I think is really important. Where's it gone? It says something like, if you're in a gloomy room. Yeah, so if you're in a gloomy room, move somewhere with more light, then sit so that the light is in front of you, optimal. You know, illuminating your face and make sure it's definitely never behind you. Like, basically, it's like I've probably been on, you know, 1,000 Google Hangouts where the person's sitting in semi-darkness and it looks like I'm talking to, like, you know, anonymous. It's really disconcerting. Like, it's better to have the camera off.
Yeah, there's some interesting things here as well. Like, if you're traveling occasionally, make sure you have a portable solution for calls. If you're traveling heavily, accept that you need to carry peripherals in your luggage, an external mic and cam, even if that feels like redundant weight. Otherwise, you're compromising your ability to do your job both on internal calls and also client calls. The one that struck me, though, is for you. It says, if you have a lot of facial hair, you need to make sure you have good lighting, video and microphone to compensate. It's harder for other people to see your facial expressions or read your lips.
That's interesting.
So there's things like that. The fact that they use Zoom, which I think is a great sort of equalizer in terms of group chat and group video chat, I should say. I also, they use Slack. There's Think before you ping is basically the
that's great.
The ethos there. And then they've got a whole bunch of equipment recommendations. So they talk about microphones, they talk about webcams, they talk about laptop stands and keyboards and mice and other kit and that kind of stuff. So
I just bought that. I just bought the Logitech C920 actually.
Oh,
the webcam. Yeah. Cheap and effective camera, which is a good option if you're traveling frequently.
Well, let me just open. Oh, it's exactly the same one I've got, I believe. what is it? HD. I mean, it looks like that. I'm sure it's very, very similar, if not the same. But yeah, it's really, really worth a look. And I think there are a lot of people writing about remote, but a lot of them tend to be those kind of self-congratulatory. How do you say that, Kieran?
Congratulatory.
Articles around, you know, we're great, we're remote. And I think remote can be pretty isolating. It can be, you know, I'm sat at a desk in my spare bedroom. It's not all Bali beaches and, you know, flat whites and stuff like that. And so I think the fact that they've done this is really interesting.
I think you're right, and I think that openly putting their intent about remote out there is really important as well, because I don't think enough companies do. I think you could take a remote job, and the reality of remote in a company is very different. I've been remote in a couple of companies or three companies now, and remote's very different in each one of those.
Yeah, totally. Totally. But definitely worth a look. I say it's sort of one of the things that I'm particularly interested in. So I'm sure if we do make our 50th episode this year, there may well be another article on this. But that's hanno.co playbooks. There's other ones in there as well. There's an engineering playbook, ops playbook, which is kind of a company. So they talk about services, pitching, marketing, things, mission and governance, client projects. And then in the engineering playbook, there's development philosophy, tools and workflows. So they talk about tech stack, CSS, browser and device testing, static site generators and things like that. So lots and lots of meat in there. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
They use Netlify and ZeekNow and Middleman and various other things. So yeah, definitely worth a look if that's something that piques your interest. But we have sadly like no dog tech of late. The days of a new dog related piece of technology seem to have escaped us. But I did find something sort of animal related to round out, Kieran.
Yes, mice.
Mice, or the mouse, MAUS.
Mouse. Yeah. So the first gesture controlling Mac mouse.
Yeah. So your friend of mine, Cat Hunter, the best name in.
Oh yeah.
Bought the Lofri. How would you say that? Keyboard. It's like one of these sort of pastel coloured mechanical keyboards. Looks very much like a typewriter. And she's a big fan. And so I was very eager when I found that Lofri were doing a mouse in the same color. I pinged her the link and she was like, oh, disgusting. I mean, it's a strange looking beast because it kind of does look like a mouse with big ears. It's an odd thing. Would you buy one of these?
No. I don't know. Like, I don't find them disgusting to look at. They have very much broken the kind of like norms of product design in this space, which I like.
Would you say they're disruptive then, Kieran?
No, not even remotely. I just think that I like the fact that it looks different, but I think there's a very, you know, with anything that's like gesture based or like, you know, anything that's like IO or like, you know, any way that you can control your computer, there's a huge learning curve because you want it to become like muscle memory, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I've always like, you know, people, you know, developer friends of mine have always been like, oh, you need to switch to Dvorak or, you know, whatever it might be. And I'm always, oh, you need to switch to like those Microsoft style split keyboards because they're better for your, you know, better for your wrists and stuff. And I've always avoided it because there's such a big learning curve in, you know, teaching yourself to type on a Dvorak keyboard or whatever. And I think the same thing applies here. Like, I'd just be put off by the, you know, the level of investment needed to change how I work, you know?
Do you think those two buttons would pose too much of a...
Well, they're not buttons, though, are they? They're gesture-based, so you move your fingers above them and they... Yeah. Okay. It's a shadow of your hand, it says.
I'm sure your hand will cast a big shadow, Kieran.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of trend for... I mean, where is the innovation in things that we use on a daily basis? Like, I mean, I'm sat in front of a very small little Bluetooth keyboard, which cost me like $20 or something off Amazon. I've got a... I spent more on my mouse, actually. I use a Logitech silent mouse. I'm a very considerate coworker.
Nice.
Silent click mouse. But yeah, these things fundamentally haven't changed, and maybe there's a good reason for that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with, you know, a standard Apple keyboard, to be honest with you. You know, I've got an Apple keyboard with the number pad or whatever, wired, not wireless. And it's, you know, it's great. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think the keyboards look really nice. You know, the one that Kat's bought. But they don't. But obviously, they're just, you know, they're a standard keyboard. Whereas the mouse looks a bit like a step into the unknown for me.
Yeah, it's a mouse too far for you.
It is. What about you? Would you buy it?
No. No, like bags, I just prefer everything in black, and it doesn't come in black, so.
Oh yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's not just bags. It's everything, isn't it?
Well, I don't know where you want to take this conversation, Kieran.
So. I mean, everything you buy is black, is what I'm saying.
Yes, pretty much. Although, yeah. I did buy a pen recently. Very nice. Well, if we to change the subject rapidly.
Rapidly, yeah.
A Baron Fig Squire.
Right. Like the Red Baron of pens.
Baron Fig, one of Shopify's most famous stores. I should say they're on Shopify. Shopify don't own them, but Baron Fig, yeah, they make like notebooks and pens and bags and stuff. Right. And I was the winner of a monthly survey award, so I got $50. And I thought, wow. Oh, should I spend this? Because I bought something from previously.
Actually won on a survey.
Yeah. So I got the Bolt edition in yellow or gold, I should say, a little lightning bolt.
Gold,
very nice. It's not.
That's
gold,
a step obviously. Into the unknown for you.
It is. So just to prove you wrong, it's not available. It's actually not available in black. But very nice it is too. Very nice.
Well, they're doing $100 store credit right now if you subscribe to their mailing list.
Yeah, but I mean, like they'll pick someone from it, right? I mean, everyone doesn't get $100.
No, not everyone doesn't get $100. Yeah, clearly.
Surely.
Yeah, it's a lucky it's potluck, isn't it?
Potluck.
It's anybody this month. It's $100 a month they're giving away.
It's pretty good. The irony was that it contravened import, so it ended up costing
£17.43,
which is still good value.
You mean they didn't take it's a gift?
No, they put the real value on there. I mean, these people who play by the rules, honestly.
I know, it's terrible.
Honestly.
So which one did you buy? What's it called?
The Bolt, limited edition.
Wow.
Yeah, you like that.
The Bolt Rollerball.
Yes, the Bolt Rollerball.
Wow, that is...
It's very nice.
That's a statement pen.
Yeah, I'm now torn though, because do I go for the little pen holder as well? You can get that, you can have it. The little thing you just drop it in and sort of what... You know, magnetizes itself.
Is that the Squire Rollerball pen stand?
Pen stand, yeah.
In a sort of concrete grey.
Yes, that's what concerns me. See, it would mess with the with
the aesthetic of your bamboo desk.
Yes.
Mm.
Have you got a bamboo desk as well?
No, I've gone oak, mate.
Gone oak. That's you all over.
Seriously. That is old school.
Old school. Is it a weighty thing?
Like it is a weighty thing.
It does require
two of us to carry it if we need to move it.
What, you and the dog?
Yeah, me and the dog. Dog has like a backpack thing that he uses to carry stuff.
I think we've signaled the end of episode 49. Yeah, but the low-free mouse. If anyone out there ever listens,
disagrees with us
and thinks
it's the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah. Usual comms methods apply.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway. Or just shake your head and don't contact us.
yeah, he don't like comms. Don't like comms.
No, don't like.
Don't like feedback. Don't like comms. It's all good.
People.
But yeah, we will be back. I mean, you know, as Kieran says, no promises, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, we will be back soon.
All right, my friend. I look forward to it. Until then, cheers.
Cheers.